Hey, car guys and car gals, welcome back to the Car Guy Coffee Podcast. We are excited and, man, we are crazy caffeinated, ready to have a cup of coffee and a conversation with a couple of guys that really know what's going down in the back scenes. So before we get started, once again, this is Lou Ramirez, the car guy.
This is Fred Lenarts, the subprime hero.
And we got a couple of great guests that you need to see, you need to hear from, and you need to learn from. But before we do that, check this out.
So same thing for you. Obviously, it was the same driven, but you weren't coming from a car world where you love cars like he did. What made you say, I want to do this with Chris?
No, good question. So first, I can't resist. I need to tell you that he's such a big used car car guy. His first car was a DeLorean.
Absolutely.
He bought it, wrecked, and then Craigslist and put it together with his dad. So that's how much of a used car nut he is, or car nut he is. So
cool. That is really, really cool. That's like probably one of the coolest DeLorean. First cars that anybody. There's probably no one else who can match that. What was your first car?
DeLorean.
No, so I didn't have a DeLorean. My first car was a little Audi A3, and I used it to drive long distances and wasn't very emotional about it. Now, when I came to the US, I wanted to start a business in the tech space. So I was really into getting into the space, understanding Silicon Valley and being part of it. And I felt Stanford Business School might be an opportunity. I was very, very lucky to get in. I know you guys, you think that we're super smart. We're primarily lucky and also a little bit smart, maybe. But in order to be successful in business, you actually need to be street smart. And I think that's something very different than just having studied a lot. And learning to be street smart is the only way to do it is to hustle. And so that's why I respect you two so much, because you're clearly hustlers. I'd love to work with you guys because I know you do the hustle and you don't mind rolling up your sleeves and being deep in the weeds. And I think that's really important. And then at the end of business school, Chris and I went on a trip, traveled, reflecting on what do we want to do with our lives after business school. Chris had just worked at McLaren, the Formula One company, which he thought was going to be his dream job, but then he didn't.
It sounds like a dream job. I mean, I'm just saying.
Well, you should ask him why not, but he didn't go back to McLaren. And then he walked me through how the used car industry works. And I found it really interesting. I also thought this is a market where technology hasn't changed a lot quite yet. And maybe we are well positioned to make a difference, but once we got into it, we learned that we had to learn it the hard way, had to be in the weeds, went to wholesale auction, needed to understand how everything worked before we had a chance at making a dent in the industry. So you guys have a huge head start compared to where we were, because we had to learn everything from scratch. And then I really like the problem. Like, I think it's a really interesting problem to solve. I think the world is going to change a lot. Car ownership is going to change a lot. And if you're forward-looking, which you guys clearly are, tech savvy, I think you're in a very, very good position to make a big dent in the market.
Man, and that's awesome. And that's a really cool reason to start something. And you're right. The used car market, the technology, the stuff that people are doing is old school. It's been around and they haven't changed much at all. It's very, very small changes. And
Dealertrack just changed the way that it does it. It's been the same way ever since I've been in the car business.
Yeah.
They just adjusted
their Dealertrack.
Off. I was like, why would you change what's working? Why? But it is what it is.
It's actually I actually like the new Dealertrack.
I was mad when they took the button away from my phone, right? You know? I mean, but hey, it is what it is. Things are going to change, folks. That is going to be a constant.
Yes, man. And I applaud you guys for that. And the company, you know, coming up with that idea, That's leading into my next question, actually, because it's what you guys are inventors. You know, that's an idea, and you turned it into something. That's inventing something. You know, and to me, that's really awesome. And I applaud you guys for that. That's something that I can't say that I've marked up. I invented a child, I guess. I had a child.
You're ahead of us.
Yeah, so it's really awesome. I have, you know, he's amazing. You know, he's 16, going to turn 17. So I'm a very lucky guy. He's had a, you know, he has a whole plan.
We know
what
we've invented. We've invented the most fun place to come have a cup of coffee
and
conversation. Anywhere.
Boom. Bam. Didn't even think about that. You're right. What? So that being said, my fourth question for you guys is going to be, what does it take to become somebody that can come up with an idea? What's the one trait, or if there was something you can give to somebody to make them their mind go, you know what? Because there's people out there have all these great ideas, but they just don't apply it, right? What does it take to not just have an idea, but also to apply it? What would you say? I'm going to go with Nikki first.
Bam!
I've always had sure.
So you look at all these startups in Silicon Valley that do really well, and they all look like an overnight success. And somebody had an idea, just executed, and it happened. That's not how startups work. This is not how businesses work. In reality, businesses work with a number of failures and iterations around an idea. And then if you're working on it long enough, you stumble into something that happens to work. Oh. And so to answer your questions, I think you need to be tenacious and you need to be willing to iterate and you need to be willing to just make a step forward and get going in order to have a chance at finding something that works. Does that make sense?
100%. Yes. You can't be scared of failure. You have to look at failure as just the next step to being successful. Because everybody, like you said, there's tons. Anybody who's successful has more failures than people who have. And I mean, it's unbelievable what they've gone through. And if you read any stories, you know, as I've been reading lately, as I talked about earlier, I read a lot of stories about people and what they've done. And, you know, doing these interviews and hearing their, you know, what they've been through. They had a lot of failures, but those failures never stopped them. And I think that's a huge key, is not to stop because you fail. It's to be excited because you failed. Hey, wow, I just learned something here. And this is why this didn't work. All I have to do is adjust or maybe just completely wipe the drawing board and start all over. Whatever it is, you know, because you went through those failures. And it applies to us on the sales floor. Like when I was a salesman, when I first started on the floor, I had to go through failures before I can really be good at it. I couldn't just go in. I wasn't like first guy I talked to, boom, 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 boom. And they said they did everything, they laid down for me. They bought the car. I stumbled. My words were, you know, not right. I probably guaranteed him stuff I probably shouldn't have. You know, there were so many things because, you know, you're just trying to people please when you first start. But then you start to learn that there's a certain way, there's a process if you do your steps. And so I learned and I made a lot of mistakes and I still do, but I look forward to the mistakes because I know that as I make them, I'm going to get better. I'm going to hear back, fix it and make it better for me. So yeah, absolutely.
There's Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, has this really, really good quote. He says, "The only time you must not fail is the last time you try."
I love it, man.
I think it's true.
Phil Knight is all over it.
1,000% true, because generally we would point to the person that says, "I have a no failure record." I would look at them and say, "You're not trying anything. You're not even trying then. You cannot be applying yourself to going to new levels if you don't fail," right? My son doesn't beat himself up if he doesn't push up that heavier weight, right? If he doesn't hit a new max, he's not losing all mad and all messed up. He's doing what it takes to then get to the next level. But he'll take on that failure by just trying on that heavier weight, right? And that's how we grow, is we get ourselves to a point of being uncomfortable with what it is and trying to find a way to stretch ourselves to what we believe it could be. And if we fail at getting there, well, we don't give up on the goal. We just learned one more way that it doesn't come together. And that's part of the education process, right? So, I mean, I applaud you all for doing what it is that you do. And we're going to go ahead and pull this all together to get in here for this fifth question.
No, we still got
Chris. You got to get that out.
He's skipping on Chris. Chris, my man.
I have another good quote. Can I give you another good quote?
Please do.
One of my favorite. The greatest danger for most of us is not that our aim is too high and we miss it, but that it's too low and we reach it.
That's so deep right there, but so true, man. I love quotes. I'm a big quote guy. Every week I do on Saturdays, I do this thing called a whiteboard quote of the week. And I always write a quote up that has something to do with what's going on in the world, maybe just in my world, but it inspires me. And I try to inspire other people because quotes, man, they really, when you read them, even though it's something that we know, it's just sometimes just reading the right quote said the right way.
Yeah.
What makes you go, dang it, I need to do it. Yes. And it pump me up for the day or for the week or for however long I need it.
Agreed.
I love quotes. So Chris, Mr. Coleman, what does it take to make something that's an idea to apply it and make it happen?
I always joke that the best way to start something is to just start something. And so I think a lot of people overthink getting started. Mm. And so like, you always second guess, should I do this? Should I not do this? And obviously you have to think about it. But I think where most people get held up is they overthink about it. And then they talk themselves out of all the reasons. Like someone who, to be an entrepreneur, to start an idea, you have to be like overly optimistic in some way. Otherwise, your odds of this like career as a whole working out are actually not very good, right? And so instead you think, well, maybe I can just bend the odds in my favor. And you have to have that same mentality about getting started. And so like with anything, you don't know anything until you get started. Like you can think about it all you want, but they're just theories. And so I think the best way to actually do something is put pen to paper, figure out what the actual landscape is, start making progress as quickly as you can, and then take moments to step back and think about it as you've got evidence, rather than being overly cerebral about everything all at once. Now, obviously, don't take your life savings and invest it in some idea you came up with in the shower and quit your job. Like, there's a balance to this too, but like, don't talk yourself out of it.
Right, nope. Which is easy to do. Right,
it's very easy to do. All the time. Yeah, and it's very true. Like you said, you just got to get started. Whether it's just the small things, you know, it's like I became big about having a daily planner, a 3-month planner, where I like to write my stuff out. So I know that I can do these little things to get to my big goal. But I could just do these little things every day, and eventually, it amounts to big something huge. So it is just that first step. If you don't take that first step, you're never going to go. So just take it. Just even if it's just learn about the subject. It's, you know, whether you're like, there's a lot of people I know in my world that don't know anything about investing money. It blows my mind. But I always tell them your biggest problem why you don't invest is because I hate to use the word, but ignorance. You just don't know how to invest, what it takes to invest, and really the risk of what it is. And it's, if you go educate yourself just a little bit, when I started investing, you know, I didn't really have anybody teach me. I just went and read. I had a plan. I said, I'm going to do it for 30 days. I'm going to spend 30 minutes a night studying about how to invest, where to invest. What's, you know, what's good? What does this mean, that mean? And I studied and I did it for 30 days and it gave me so much confidence that when I made my first investment, I was like, no problem. It was really simple. Why didn't I do this 20 years ago? But, you know, it's one of those things, you know, and I think that's the key. It's you just have to start doing something, build that goal up, make it amount to small things, turn into big things. So, yeah.
And having an eye for seeing a need for a solution.
Solutionaries, no doubt.
Chris, in one of our conversations, we discussed how you went step by step, kind of formulating things just from being inside of a room with a bunch of people trying to find a car. Break that down for me a little bit, because it turned into what you didn't even know you were looking for, a solution to problems you didn't really even realize they were there. But then you said, hey, wait a minute, if I can do this for them,
oh yeah,
I can do this. This is something that's needed.
Yes. Yeah, that was really the formation of Carlypso. And so, like, I was just known as one of the car experts in the Stanford class. And so people, like, what happened was people organically came up to me and they're like, hey, you know, I'm thinking of selling my car. And then I said, okay, well, like, what are you doing? And so they said, well, you know, I posted on Craigslist and I looked at Kelley Blue Book. I said, well, you know, like, there's a number of things you can do to maximize your value. And then I just went through the steps saying, look, there's really like 4 listing engines you can go to. You need to make sure it's priced slightly more aggressively than this, and less, you know, don't have it be so low that no one would suspect, like people suspected something wrong with it. And so we just got through this process of talking to more and more people around, here's everything I already know you need to do. And then people just say, well, you know, I don't want to actually do all that. Can you just do it? And so we were their classmate. And so the answer was like, well, yeah, we can, but like, we kind of, I'd only do it for, so many people are asking at this point, let's do it for money. And so let's see if there's a business to be made out of this.
Right.
And so the idea was like, hey, selling your car is actually, it's like your investment. You know, if you don't do it frequently. And so you're not an investor by any means as an expert. And the same thing with people selling their cars, they're not car sales experts. So like the hurdle to getting all this knowledge is A, something they didn't want to do. And then right. B, there's just a lot of knowledge that you, like if you were an investor, you'd gain intrinsically and like it would be obvious. But if you weren't, then it's just annoying to have to get all that. And so that's where this idea for Carlypso came from.
It's cool that, you know, that you got inspired that way, because it made you go, hold on a second. There's something here, and no one, because no one can find it anywhere else. And I'm in a room full of smart people. Right.
You know, they don't want to be inconvenienced with what they don't know. People also are okay with not knowing what they don't know.
Right.
And saying, I don't need to learn that.
Yeah, all services, right? Like, I don't need to know how to paint my bumper. I can pay somebody to do that. A lot of skills-based work where I won't know, I don't have the time, I'm happy to pay people.
I agree with that 100%. And yes. That's why there's people out there who are experts in their fields, you know, and I definitely love to use them in because I wherever I'm weak, there's people that are strong, and that's how you make things better for you. You know? So
I mean, I will absolutely be a master in my field of this business, but I will not be able to get underneath that hood and be the master of what has to happen. I will pull somebody that is a master mechanic and say, what is this doing? You know what I mean? They're mad at it. We're good at these numbers, but I need that to stop doing that. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it all balances itself out if we all enjoy our role. And then also just listen to the experts. Henry Ford was big about saying, I do not know all of the answers, but I know how to pick up that phone right there and call the person that does. And that's a key piece of being able to be successful, is knowing what you don't know, I don't know what I don't know. And that's okay. Chris knows. Nikki knows. I'm going to give them a call.
That's
right. You know what I mean? And find out what it is that I don't know.
It's not about what you know. It's about who
you unlikely, know. But you can give me a call.
It's funny, though, because a lot of the things you learn are almost serendipitous, right? They're just by being – there's this muscle memory you develop, and you're not actively learning in it. So, like, our newest business really came out of
I can't wait to hear about
really this. Came out of understanding, like, we saw people who couldn't get loans through us because we only serve prime credit. And so we saw a lot of subprime individuals, and I would really segment them in two categories, who are the sort of behavioral subprime who – just never had good financial education, so they don't understand everything that's going on. Yeah. And so, like, they're not going to modify their behavior until there's a forcing function. And then there's what I'll call situationally bad credit, where people have bad credit for circumstances that could happen to any of us, whether they're medical bills, divorce, investments that should have been good went wrong. And so all these things can happen, and then people get a car loan, and we notice that, hey, to these people that are paying, you know, interest that's 20 to 29%, that's based on a loan that they got 2 or 3 years ago, and now they're actually good credit. Like, isn't there an opportunity for these people to be in a better financial product at this time? And why have they not been reevaluating this as time goes on? And so that's really how we thought about, you know, is there a way to reward and keep up this good behavior for people who are getting themselves out of that situation? And they don't have to be in. They don't have to be in that same loan for the entirety of the, you know, 5 or 6 years that they originally signed up for. But rather, there's a way to get better loans, and we want to make it super easy for people to do that.
I love that, man. And that's, you're a solutionary. You're a human being that's just trying to help people. And I can't wait to talk about this during the Fresh News some more, because this is so exciting. Because we kind of dabbled on that a little bit, you know, about a month ago. But I'm definitely really excited about talking about that some more, because that is, to me, huge,
big,
gigantic, big, huge. You know, and I hope that just puts waves all over the car world, man.
And that's really something that's actually happening to so many dealers right now. So many dealers have developed an avatar of what they want their customer to look like, and things change, COVID-19, right? Things adjust inside of our world, and you can take that pristine buyer that's now inside of a different class, and they're not an automatic approval with those banks anymore. You know what I mean?
I've been out of work for 3 months. Things happen.
So the fluctuation, or there's going to be a big influx inside of the subprime market with savvy buyers. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Savvy buyers are going to make a jump into a different world of finance. And that is going to be interesting of who learns how to deal with that and then learns how to facilitate that. Right.
Or you build, like, that's what Chris and I ultimately intend. You build a new product, like a loan where you tell your customer, I know like something terrible happened. You lost your job. And unfortunately, given the circumstances today, your rate is X and that feels high, but make your payments, get your job, and your loan automatically adjusts. And so then you're not overpaying for the rest of your life over the rest of the term of the loan, but it adjusts down automatically. And how good of a value proposition would that be for your customers?
That's incredible. That would get in just being in the world I'm in. I'm Fred, the subprime hero. And just so you know, my response to that as a finance manager is, I love that product.
I want it.
I want it. That's exactly what I want it now, because I will. Trust me. I cannot wait. But what I could tell you is this, that right there, if there's a person out there, if there's any dealer owner out there that's looking for an edge to really help and really change the lives of customers, not just put them on a rate because that's the only rate they, but here, look, this is the rate I can get you, but let's prove yourself. You know, we use this a lot as we talk about this with customers. Hey man, make payments for 2 years, come back, trade out. You know, you should be able to qualify for a better rate so you can get that nice. But now they can see it happen during the loan. And I think that that's going to be huge. As Trump would say, huge, right? So, but no, it is, guys. It's wonderful. I cannot wait to talk about this some more. What, you have a fifth question?
I do have a fifth question.
Let's go with the fifth question.
Stir this up a little bit, because I just honor the individuals that we have here. We are all from different cultures. We're all from different countries even, right? Yeah. Guys, I remember the first conversation that we had here. We had Fred and Nikki, and they're talking all this German reference of their lives. And I'm
kind
of
like, yeah.
It's like, what?
Munich area, yeah.
I mean, they kept going, and I was like, I cannot say anything.
Does your audience even know that Fred speaks almost fluent German?
I wish I spoke almost fluent German.
It would be a fun change up to the show real quick if we started off with just you guys just talking in German and everybody be like, what do we do? What did we do?
Did we,
what do we change? But anyway, with that though, again, culture has brought us together with this incredible melting pot that we're in, somehow or another gets us to be here digitally, right? We've never shook hands. We never high five. We never met. We're not even really doing that with our customers right now. We don't shake, high five, do any of that stuff. Mm. But we have connected here in the digital land to solve problems for the customers that we see, don't see, meet, don't meet. And we're now finding different ways to bring that, commodity, but bring that satisfaction of a full completed transaction to them. And you guys are solving problems on your side, and we're solving problems on our side. And there's many people in the middle there, but there are things that, again, I honor about you all in previous conversations. I heard the story of the opportunities that you all have had to get where it is that you are. And you approach those opportunities with great honor, with, hey, I appreciate me being set up for this. These are opportunities that not everybody gets to have. Being able to play a sport at this level is not an opportunity everybody gets to have. At the same time, I know that there's more. I know that there's better. Being able to have this job is a great opportunity, and I'll treat it with great honor. But I know that there's more. There's not just more in this, and nobody owes me anymore, but there's more potential in me to go get more. And you guys have been successful in your field. And of course, I'm layering this up for you all to get really to a simple question that would more or less just be, what in all of this has been the greatest reward that you all have experienced inside of all of these great things and milestones that you've made, from building businesses to building connections to seeing problems that people didn't even know they had the problem. And you were like, no, you do have a problem, and I have a solution. Here you go. What has been the greatest reward for you all inside of so far your career? And there's many years left. We have many moons to experience, right? But so far, what would be the biggest trophy on your wall that may not have a trophy for it? It might be more just an at-heart thing. I guess we'll go ahead and kick this up to Nikki. And then
Nikki, hear this guy? It's actually incredibly similar to all the things you've said. It's helping people. It's helping customers buy a car that they otherwise wouldn't have bought or couldn't have afforded, and we made it happen. And just helping them find a means for transportation to then progress in their personal lives. That's number one. Number two, that's a little bit more particular to me because I happen to run a big team. Like, the chance to be working with a lot of people and making a difference to their lives was incredibly rewarding too. And I look forward to that opportunity again when we start in our next company and hire a good team. Just being a father figure for them and helping them learn, and then also learning from them. Like, it's clearly, you hire experts for expert roles, and I'm more of a generalist. I'm not particularly good at one thing. And so I'm looking forward to learning from other people and hopefully have an impact on their lives.
I think you're being modest. I'm sure you're pretty good at a lot of things. Yeah. But I do understand what you mean. I always say I'm a jack of all trades, you know, not a master of none, you know, and it's cause I love to dabble in a lot of things. I like to I like to check this out. And like, much like Chris, I like to figure how things out, how they work, and then rebuild them back up and maybe make them better. Right. So I like to do that, but I've never believed that I was the best at one thing. You know, I've always was really good at whatever sport I was in. I was a stud in it, but maybe I wasn't the best, you know, but I always did really well. So yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a great, 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 great,
great answer.
Yeah, great answer.
Great answer.
So what's up, my man, Chris?
Chris. Yeah.
For me, it was I think the greatest achievements are these like forced growth cycles through failure. And so, you know, whenever I've been working in a job, I've always felt like things get to a steady state or normal where you know how to do it, you can sort of execute. And then there's a question like, okay, what's next? And when we were running the business, I think there was a very different sense of like, hey, things, like we're trying to find something that works. And often you would end up literally just at a dead end. And it was one of those things where in a normal job, there's sort of like cheat codes of, well, the business sort of goes on anyway. And so your downside's sort of limited. But having all the pressure on you is actually really nice in some ways, because it forces you to have to find a solution, and that's when you actually learn, and that's when you actually grow, and that's when you like fully ingest everything that's happening. Because there are other people relying on you, whether they're customers or employees or mentors or co-founders. And so like those moments for me of being really forced to try and figure something out, and even when I had no idea what the right answer was at the time, I think those have been the biggest achievements. And there's where I really felt like my career, my personality, and my learning was actually accelerated there. And so I felt like things moved faster than under normal time.
It's true. And they, like they say, pressure makes diamonds, you know, yes. And a lot of times that's what it takes. Like for me, I realized that when I was young, that when I get pressured, I do better. When I'm nervous for some reason, I click, oop, I'm good. I'm ready to go. That's, you know, being an athlete or whatever I do, being a car salesman, going out and shaking a hand really quick with somebody I've never met, all that pressure, it turns it into a diamond for me, you know, and that's what it does for you. And that's so key. And that's a great, great point. And I love that you have that viewpoint on that.
With that, you guys see, and I'm talking to the audience, talking to everybody out there. And you heard Nikki hit on it earlier that he got into Stanford and almost didn't, right? You guys almost didn't get in. And you,
competitive.
Many people would get to the point of saying, I mean, and I'm sure that the night before or prepping yourself to try to get in, the application process, all of that stuff, right? I'm going through that with kids right now, getting into school and all that fun stuff and all the things that go into that. And there's that nail biter moment, you know, oh, I got the letter, or, oh, it might be time. Yeah. But it's like you're waiting for that one reward at the moment, you made it, you're in, we can do this, boom. And then it's, now I got to do it. now the heat is on. Now the pressure is on. I got what I was asking for.
Yeah.
What I was asking for in most cases was an opportunity to take something further. You know what I mean? To go to the next level. And that's something that, again, I admire in anybody that's pursued and created and then followed through with something of value for people. And that's something that all of you all that are listening, no, if you're ever aspiring to go to the next level, and we've been speaking about it a lot recently, understand that next level is going to come with new challenges. The person, you know, in the military sense, the person that runs a squad has so much responsibility, but the person that's promoted, that's running the platoon, has dozens more responsibilities.
Yeah.
Then a company has hundreds of responsibilities. You know, that person that goes up in rank, isn't just not doing work. They're getting paid a little more and they have a little more responsibility because they have more responsibility, right? When you get that reward, when you get that promotion, when you get that entry into the school, when you get into that program, make sure that you honor it and take it with a full-fledged effort to say, hey, I'm going to find out how good I can get out of this, and I am not going to be afraid to fail at reaching heights that have not been reached yet by my predecessors. And you guys are doing that. You guys are solutionaries. We definitely honor that. We're so thankful for it. This has been a really
good five-liner,
great five-liner.
Man, it was an amazing five-liner. I can't wait to get to this fresh news, folks. Yeah, our next segment, people listening right now, this is fresh news that we're getting ready to talk about. This is like, this is new to me. I can't wait to hear more about it. They have made some changes in their lives. So when we get back from this break,
we're going to get you some
news. You're going to get you some
news. So car guys and car gals, this is Lou Ramirez, the car guy.
This is Frelin Arts, the subprime hero.
And we are brewing solutions with Chris and Nikki, and we will be right back.